The Mitchell's Front Page Podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11.
Davina Montgomery is on the line. Davina, good morning. How are you?
I'm well, Mitch. How are you?
Good, thank you. You having a good Queen's Birthday holiday?
Oh, look, it's actually been really, really nice, Mitch. We've not done too much, but we did go out for the first time. We broke our COVID lockdown and went off to the Healesville Sanctuary yesterday to spend a bit of time in the open air with, you know, quite a lot of other people, but really, really, really socially distanced. And it was just nice. It was nice to be outside. It's always a little bit weird, though, going back out and seeing, you know, those numbers of people around you. But by the end of the day, I felt like I wasn't any risk at all, which was fantastic.
And were they doing all the hand? Well, of course they would have been doing all the hand sanitizers.
Yeah, of course.
Did they take down names and phone numbers for contact tracing, etc.?
You had to pre-book. So, and I think that was a really, really, really good way of doing that. So all of our open spaces now that are available for people to go to, like our zoos, they've got a maximum limit that you're allowed there for the day. And I think at Healesville, because it's ground space, they're allowed to have 1,500 people there across the day. And even, you know, babies have to have a number. So everyone that was in there had to be sort of checked off. So, yes, they knew who was there. They had tracing for everyone that was there. But, of course, you know, what we do know about this virus is that it's very much more an aerosol virus. It gets passed through the air largely in those droplets in the air. So being in the open air is much safer, being able to keep that distance and really, you know, being mindful of people. And everyone was. That's what was really nice about it. There was only a couple of occasions where I sort of felt that people had sort of forgotten. And it was probably more so because there were small children around and they needed to be steered back to an appropriate social distance. But other than that, look, it was really nice to see just how seriously people were taking it.
And good to see people supporting local business and getting out there. And I spoke to one person over the weekend that said they'd be happy to go out and have a cheese toasted sandwich, you know, just as a way of getting out of the house and actually having a dine-in meal again, because this was the first weekend that you could do that.
Yeah, it was. So, and I think that's certainly happening as we drove back on the way. We drove through quite a number of our regional towns, obviously through the Yarra Valley and then coming back through Geelong. And we could see people that were in dining restaurants when we came down through the waterfront of Geelong, just specifically to have a look and just to see if things were open and people were in there. And they were, and it was nice.
Yeah. No, fantastic. So the other question about all of this is the protest that took place in the city. Yes, it's an important cause to talk about the injustice in the criminal justice system, but does it jeopardise all of the work that we've been doing and all the sacrifices we've made? Because I looked at the photos and I didn't see people looking like they were 1.5 metres apart in those crowds.
No, and I think you're right, Mitch. I mean, it was good to see so many photos of people with face masks, but I'm not sure how many people would have had access to face masks. I don't even know if you can buy them readily at the moment.
I don't know.
But look, it's such a hard one, isn't it? Because the reason for people being there is so fundamentally important. And we are living in these huge shifting times. It feels like those, you know, those late 60s, early 70s, it feels like we're back there. Where that, in terms of it being such a big social shift, and that groundswell to say, enough, we've had enough of this, we need to be better at this, and we need to have our voices heard and taken seriously. So the protest, the act of protesting itself, I'm hugely supportive of, and I'm so proud of people from all walks of life and all backgrounds getting out there and supporting Indigenous and Torres Strait Islander people and acknowledging that we've got huge mistakes that need to be rectified, that we've got huge problems still in the system that need to be addressed. So I was really proud of that. But at the same time, yes, it is a concern, but we're not going to know. So that all of this that we're worried about, Mitch, the one thing that we absolutely will make a difference either way and will tell us is not where people have been or what they've been doing. It's how much community transmission of this virus is out there in our state and our country at the moment. So without community transmission of the virus, we don't have an issue with there being lots of people. We don't have an issue with people being at local sport if we don't have community transmission of the virus. If we do, then there can be a problem. So I think we're going to know more in a couple of weeks. I really hope that it's not. I mean, our community transmission numbers have been very low, but we do know that there are very small numbers still out there. So you know, it would be awful to see the numbers go back up, and it would be awful to kind of see this cause and this issue being undermined by fears of the virus. So if there was an outbreak, then I think the attention would turn back to the outbreak and the outrage of people being there together. And it takes away the importance of why they were there in the first place. So
you could argue that it's already done that. If you look at the front page of the Courier Mail from yesterday up in Brisbane, it was attacking the fact that there were so many people out there protesting when the border was closed. They weren't talking on the front page about the actual cause or deaths in custody. They were talking about the gathering.
Yeah, look, you know, I don't want to use the term gutter journalism, but it does occur. I just think that's exactly why we need to be better than that. You know, that reaction, that immediate harsh reaction to say it's stupid. I mean, I was really disappointed to hear those words come from Matthias Cormann. I think, you know, if you've put yourself in a position to be a leader in this country, which all of our senior politicians have, particularly our senior politicians and cabinet ministers and people who are in at the forefront of whatever party that they represent, you've got a responsibility to be a bit more balanced than that. I don't think you can just get away with, you know, I don't think it is acceptable for you to just say the top of mind thing or the thing that immediately makes you react without thinking really about what this means for everyone, because frankly, their job is to represent everyone, not just their own personal view or the people who feel like them. So I absolutely hear the fear. I think that's really reasonable. And I think we need to acknowledge it, and it should be part of the conversation, but it can't be the conversation.
And more broadly, what are the ramifications over in the US? Are you following that with interest, given that, of course, it's an election year this year and they've got a lot of other issues that they've got to deal with?
Yeah, fascinating. It's fascinating politically. Socially, it's just heartbreaking. It's really heartbreaking to see that footage, to see, you know, to hear the stories of people and to see that there's still so much violence in response to even the protests. You know, people are protesting about violence and then it's encouraging more violence. But then there's those great stories of hope. You know, there are those, and I can't remember the name of the city. I was reading this story in the car yesterday on the way out. Obviously, I wasn't driving this time.
No.
it was about a county that had a huge problem, a huge spike in violence, in murders, in crime. And the police department did this huge shift in 2012, and they went, you know what, we're actually going to pivot around, we're going to move around from that crackdown mentality, we're going to become community police force. And that's exactly what they did, and they became a community police force. They were initially heavily unionised, and it was quite a high-paying job to be a policeman in that, or a policewoman in that area. They actually de-unionised and then reformed under their own auspices to try and get more police numbers, because they knew they needed more police numbers. But what they wanted was police interaction with people, and that's exactly what they did. They got out there and made themselves part of the community. They got to know people who were around the streets. They got to know people's faces, their families, where they worked or where they didn't work or what their problems were. And they saw the crime numbers absolutely plummet. So the examples of how to do this are there. We've just got to start learning the lessons.
That's the thing over in the US that we were talking about on the program last week, that the police system over there is so localized that from one county to the next, it's a very different police force.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it definitely is. It's part of its problem and its strength. It's the potential for it to be amazing for that exact reason. But it also comes with inherent problems because, you know, everyone can do their own thing. So in a country like America, I find it really hard. I know there's been some commentary about, you know, nationalising or really, you know, taking a greater control of how police done. I'm not entirely sure that that's worked fantastically well in lots of places. I just can't see it in America. I could be wrong, but I can't see it happening. There's such a diverse communities over there. And I just think, you know, I'm not entirely sure how that would work. But I think the fundamentals have to be there. So the fundamentals of what are the basics of those rules, what exactly are our expectations, and how are we going to enforce them, both police enforcing the rules but then police being accountable for them as well, and the justice system being accountable as well. That's the issue, and it feels like there just isn't a lot of accountability, and that's of course the issue that we've had in Australia as well. That's why we have the horrific numbers of incarceration rates. I mean, in some areas, incarceration rates for, you know, Indigenous and Torres Strait Islander people is almost 100% in those areas. Like, it's just the populations, prison populations. It's ridiculous having a, you know, 50% incarceration rate where you've got a people that make up 3% of our wider population. And why we can't honour the fact that we've got the oldest continuous living culture in our country, and yet we treat it like it's not something to be incredibly proud of and honoured. I cannot understand that, and it's absolutely time to change.
I think the other issue just over in America is it's probably a more violent society if you think that everyone walking past may have a gun.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge part of it, Mitch. I mean, if there was one thing that could change in America, gun laws would be the thing that would do it. You know, we all know the issues that they've got over there. We know the power of the NRA over there. You know, that First Amendment, or is it the Fourth Amendment right to hold a weapon?
Whatever. Second Amendment free speech, I can't even remember.
Yeah, I think it's somewhere around the... But basically, it's in their constitution that people have the right to bear arms, which is an issue. So... yeah, they've got the right to bear arms, but they've also got the right to be shot in the street, and that's kind of what happens. So they need to make a decision about that. Naturally, of course, that's not going to happen under Donald Trump, but, you know, he's looking incredibly precarious at this point. I don't think people who are hardline Trump supporters, many of them will shift. Some will. I think some have already. We've heard stories of people who have. But I think more broadly, he's playing to his base, absolutely, and I don't think that base is going to shift. But the thing was that the last election, what got him over the line was not his base. So yes, his base is very clearly mainly white and not college educated. So he picked a target and he went really hard at it, and he thought that that's where he could beat the Democrats, and he did. That's where he thought he could get over Hillary Clinton, and he did. But I'm not sure that that's going to play as well this time, because you can't win on that base. And also, you know, he came in with a promise to make things so much better, and it's a pretty hard argument at the moment to say that America was better than what it was 3 or 4 years ago.
Well, we'll see what happens from here. I do know that the opponents to him, the very strong opponents, think they've got him. They think this is the issue. And, of course, we heard that when he was impeached, and he's been through so much and he's still going. So I would never write him off. But I know it's the very same people that said he had no chance of winning in 2016 that are saying, oh, he's gone.
I'm with you, Mitch. I don't think you can ever write it off. And we don't know. But we'll just wait and see. But, you know, just hope for that country, and hope for those people, and for the people around the world that, you know, that with all the sadness that's going on in the world at the moment, with all the loss that people have experienced, and with all the anger that's out there, and kind of justified anger in so many cases, that I hope that it can be a catalyst for positive change. We've got nicer things to talk about in the future, and I hope we get to see some footy, Mitch.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we'll see how this weekend goes.
Let's see.
And just to change tack, to quickly finish on something, schools are back. I'm just wondering how it's all going, given that you're a parent, you know exactly what's going on down there on the ground. Is it sort of just back to normal, or are there more restrictions? Are people nervous? Are there more safeguards?
Yeah, look, there certainly will be safeguards. Look, kids don't need to socially distance at school. That's not a thing, because they can't anyway, let's be honest. But and the risk of under 14s being a transmission risk is quite low. So I think that's the medical reasons by that. But the kids are itching to get back. They really are. As parents, it's going to be that whole, okay, great, now we have to actually get them up early enough to get there and remind ourselves how to pack school lunch.
Yes.
To make sure we have food in the house that we can pack a school lunch with, that's not just sort of cook-at-home food. So that's going to be all interesting. It'll be a readjustment period. It's not for very long, though, because we do have the July school holidays peeking around the corner.
It's amazing, isn't it, how this term has almost been just written off.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's interesting. We've got primary school just down the road where they're doing staggered drop-off and pick-up times, you know, quite different rules. And it's a very big open school, but they're very fortunate, so they've got plenty of room to, you know, to kind of have multiple entrances and kids coming in at different places. So I think they're in a really good place. My son that's in high school, I asked him, I said, look, how do you feel about catching the bus? You know, because I said, I'm happy to drive you in and pick you up. You know, I'm working at home, I can do that. If you're not comfortable about it, because, of course, buses are just, you know, hotbeds of kids all hopping all over each other.
Yes.
But he said, no, I'm okay with it, Mum. So,
well, that's good.
I don't know. I don't know that I am, but we'll just see how we go.
Incidentally, I got an email from one of the universities. It was talking about a new announcement from the World Health Organization in relation to face masks. And apparently they're changing their advice on face masks. And now they're saying, actually, yeah, it might be a good idea to wear a face mask if social distancing isn't possible in some of those places like public transport where you can't physically be 1.5 metres away. So apparently masks may be better than what was first thought.
So what we, again, being an aerosol virus, so something that does travel through the air, look, most people don't use masks, right? Also, I'll point that out straight away. The amount of times that we've seen people with masks pulled down over the, under their nose, on and off their face, they're touching their mask, things like that. So what we do know is that masks are not particularly good at helping you not get the virus. But what they are really good at is actually decreasing the risk of someone with the virus spreading it.
Mm.
So it's and because so many people carry it and don't have any symptoms, there definitely would be benefits. I mean, if we, you know, this is a virus that spreads because people cough or talk, or that, you know, that case of the choir that was singing together. I mean, so many transmissions because people were singing. And what do you do when you're singing? You're pushing more air out of your lungs. So all of those things. So if anyone with the virus, if they're wearing a mask, we're all going to be at less risk. The trick is to know if they've got the virus. So it makes sense. I don't know how, if we've got enough of them. I certainly do not want to see another run on masks. It means our frontline health workers, our doctors, our dentists, you know, all of those people that absolutely need to have a mask. Bus drivers, good grief, you know, they would absolutely have to have.
Can't you make masks at home if you've got a bit of fabric and some elastic stuff? Elastic?
Sure, you can, but it's not. Droplets can go through fabric.
Mm.
So in terms of, you know, how much of is it actually a transmission risk? I'd say if anyone wants to make their own and they want to learn about it, you jump on the World Health Organization site. They've got a, you know, they've got a heap of information that's really easy to find, and it's the right advice. But look, you know, the reason why we say cough into your elbow is because it stops a widespread of the air in your lungs going to everyone else. So anything's probably better than nothing. If people are nervous and they want to make their own, it probably is better. But, you know, I think the most important thing is that we absolutely, for here in Australia, because our numbers are so low, the very best thing that we can do is make sure that our testing rates stay really high, that anyone who thinks they have any symptoms get tested, and then we should be able to have a chance of picking up any community transmissions. Absolutely test and trace. And for anyone who's feeling even a little bit sick, for God's sake, stay at home, get tested.
Well, thank you for being on the program. It's always good to catch up, and we'll speak to you again in a fortnight's time.
So good, Mitch. All right, cheers.
Thank you very much. Davina Montgomery joining us there.
The Mitchell's Front Page podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 to 11. Or search for Mitchell's Front Page on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or wherever you get your podcasts.